Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Today I've got a special guest on. Actually, she's not very much of a special guest anymore. She's been on lots of these podcasts. It is, of course, my girlfriend Juliana. Say hello to everyone.
Hello.
That's it.
You said, say hello to,
okay
I should say, hello to everyone.
No, that's great. Anyway, so we're going to be doing a book review. Oh, a little bit of news, actually. The reason why there's not been a book review podcast for a month is that I've been away for a month. Me and Juliana went on holiday, travelled around for, 4 weeks, around France mainly. We went to the European Juggling Convention, and like along the way, it's like, oh yeah, we're staying in a bed and breakfast tonight instead of camping. So tonight, I will review one of the books and never got around to it. I've got a Philip K. Dick book that I got to review, which I finished reading, 3 weeks ago or something like that? It's quite a long time ago. And then when we got back to Berlin, we stayed at Juliana's parents for a while, house for a while, and then we got back home and we're having new windows and heating put in. So for the last 2 days, we've pretty much just been hanging out in the apartment while builders have been putting in new heating and windows, which is pretty cool. Anyway, so there's my excuses. Life got in the way of doing a podcast. But now here we are, back with our continuing series, talking about the Vorkosigan saga, the Vorkosigan series, by Louis McMaster Bujold. And previously we have done, actually I can't remember the books, we did, I read Falling Free, you didn't read that one, but it's a pretty good book. Then I read the and reviewed the first book in the series chronologically. We're doing it chronologically, of course. I think there's no reason to not do it chronologically. Not by publication order. So then I read Shards of Honor and then Barriar. And for Barriar, Juliana joined in with me and we did that one, the last one together, I think. Was that the last one that we did? Oh, no, then we did
the first two books together.
Yeah, so we did... No, then we did The Warrior's Apprentice. And The Warrior's Apprentice was the one that we did together. And we said that the next book that we're going to do is a short story called The Mountains of Mourning. So should we just do a quick little pick-up with this little Mountains of Mourning?
Yeah.
Don't want to talk too much about the storytelling, but just... talk about the story. Oh, let me just say, we do go into this because we're reviewing all of these as we go along. It's more of a book club, so it's for people who read along with these things. So we will do probably some spoilers. I'll put it this way. We're not going to avoid spoilers about talking about what's going on. It's different from a normal SFBRP episode. So if you want a spoiler for this episode and think you should read this book, or the books that we're going to discuss, Mountains of Mourning and then The Vor Game, which is the next two books in the Vorkosigan saga, I'd say read Mountains of Mourning, don't read Vor Game. Is that what you're going to... What would you suggest?
No, it's really difficult. Mountains of Mourning, good book. We would talk about it. And The Vor Game is kind of split in two books.
Yes, well, I think the reason is because let's just go into a bit of the history of the writing. I actually read, at the end of the... I think it's the end of Mountains of Mourning. It actually says... Maybe is it going to come up here? iBooks is a bit slow. But right at the very end, it actually has a little bit about, oh, and this is more by this author. This person, they did this and this. But actually... Oh, no, it doesn't. It must have been at the end of the other book. But it actually said that the first part of The Vor Game was a small, a short story or a novella called The Weatherman.
The Weatherman, yes.
The Weatherman. So I think the part of the book that both of us really enjoyed in The Vor Game was, I think, just The Weatherman. So
if you can get just The Weatherman...
If you can get just The Mountains of Mourning and just The Weatherman...
Just read The Weatherman.
Just read The Weatherman and The Mountains of Mourning. So definitely that part. And then we can...
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Mountains of Mourning, the big things are short stories.
Yeah, it says, The novella Weatherman is an outtake from the beginning of the novel The Vor Game. If you've already read The Vor Game, you likely don't need this. So I'm guessing that's the bit that we both liked at the beginning.
Yes.
So with that said, there is some stuff in this novel which is worth reading and we both really enjoyed. That said, there was quite a bit of stuff in the second part, the second and third thirds of The Vor Game, which... annoyed me mightily, and we'll do this. So let's start off with the... So from now on, spoilers, whatever. So Mountains of Mourning, what do you think? Tell us a bit about this one.
Because I'm really enjoying reading criminal books, this is another part of my reading in... what I enjoy reading is criminal books. And this actually is like a criminal story.
Yes, yeah, a little kind of like murder mystery.
Murder mystery. And Miles has to go out to solve the problem and to solve the murder.
Yeah, he goes up into the Dendari Mountains.
Yeah, he goes to the mountain people, to the people that don't have contact to the outworld.
Outside worlds, outside he says. World. They called him in the outback. Oh, no, I actually made a note of it here. He's, that's not the right text edit. Oh, here he goes. So he calls, somewhere where he says, because nobody ever thinks to him, he says, oh, they're called out with people. He says, out in the back beyond, you know. Mm. So he goes out to talk to the back beyond people. And he is pretty much commanded by his father. His father goes, you go, take this person, take your Bothario replacement, take your bodyguard guy, your Batman, or whatever they call him.
Yeah, Batman.
The Batman. That's probably a military technical term. Yeah. I'm not quite sure about. It says, take these up, go up into the back beyond and see what you can find. And just sort out the situation. Just do something. You know, make the right decision. And I actually really, what I really liked about this this short story is that you knew that, because it's just a short story, Miles has just finished his military training, and I'm burping a bit here because I've just been drinking Coke, and he's just finished his military training, so he's like, okay, well, it's not going to be a life or death situation. All of the books up until this point have all been like, oh, now there's a battle, and now there's this, and now there's a palace going. This was the first time where you're just thinking, oh, he just needs to go and find someone, you know, and that's the great thing about you know, crime stories and detective stories and things like that, is that it's not about will the person live to the end, or, you know, will they sort it out, you know. That, and it's never about that. It's always like, will they discover who did it, or how will they discover who did it? Like, nobody watches James Bond thinking, oh, James Bond is going to die at the end. Or it's not even like, will James Bond die? No, of course he won't. Will he win the day? Well, of course he's going to win the day, but how is he going to win the day? And that's why you watch James Bond. And that's the thing, when you read these detective novels, they're always going to solve the murder, or they're always going to solve the mystery.
And
yeah.
Criminal stories is also about you as the reader. You always try to read along and always try to find out who is the murderer, the murderer, before the main character finds it out.
Yeah.
So every time when something happens, you thought, well, I knew it before.
Yeah.
You feel good about it because you feel clever.
You want to feel clever. And that's why I like to avoid spoilers, is because, like, you know, if you go, oh, well, you don't want to... No, I want to feel clever. And if I don't work it out, I want to feel stupid. You know, I like to be surprised. I like to be... I've talked about this on quite a few podcasts over the past year or so, is that I like to be made to feel stupid, and that the person in the book sort of like, well, of course it's like, as soon as it's revealed, you're like, well, of course it's obvious. And it's like, oh, was I stupid not to get that? You know, and it's that fine balance to take. So tell me, did you feel stupid or did you feel clever?
I felt very clever.
Well, I kind of felt like I was meant to feel clever, because, like, by the time it got there, it's just like, yeah, but we've already read, like, because we read Barrier, you know, The Shards of Honor and Barrier together.
Yes.
Because I'd already read that, it was really obvious. Again, I'm trying to avoid spoilers. For me, it was really obvious. And I understand if people have read these not in chronological order, but maybe publication order, and they haven't read Barrier. Barrier, it's really obvious. If you read Barrier, it's really obvious who the killer is going to be in the Mountains of Mourning.
Yeah. Do you really think it has, like, connection?
It is, because in the book, in the Mountains of Mourning, he has this conversation with someone who's like, oh, well, you know, my mother was great, and my father was great, and my father, even though my mother wanted me not to be harmed, my father just went with my mother's thing, but then it was my grandfather who did it. It was my grandfather who was the one who did this. It was my grandfather went to try and turn me in. You know, it was my grandfather. And then later on, like, and I'm just going, oh, so it wasn't the mother, and it wasn't the father, the one who they actually thought, who was trying to pin it on him. It's like, well, of course it'll be the grandmother. And then, oh yeah, I'm giving it away. Anyway, it's the grandmother. But it's like, totally, like, it's weird. But again, I didn't need to feel stupid or clever. I mean, I didn't need to feel clever about that, because I never, like, that mystery wasn't the most important thing of this. It was more like, how is Miles going to deal with this in a way that doesn't upset the locals and does keep order? And that kind of solution, that problem, the problem that he was solving wasn't who did it. It was even though they first thought it was one person, it turned out to be someone else. The real problem was, how is Miles going to have a clever situation to this to defuse the situation? And
also because in the because he and his father and his mother, they try to make Barry a bit more open for changes, and he's always been called a mutant and
little man,
and like in the what is it, outside
the back beyond,
in the mountains, people are way more behind with all their behaviors.
Yeah,
and so Miles goes there. He is disabled. He is different.
Yep.
And this is the first thing that upsets the mountain people, because they can't live, or they have no idea how to deal with a person like him, because all the way there, all the time before, they always killed people like him.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's somebody who is a boss who gives orders.
Well, even Aril Vorkosigan, in the right at the very beginning of Shards of Honor, someone gets hit with the nerve disruptor.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we better just kill him now because he's just going to be disabled all his life. And Cordelia's like, nope, let's get him. We're going to, even though he's going to be like a child for the rest
I
of his life.
I promised him
I'm going to look after him. I'm going to take him back. And he's like, really? Yep, like that. And we talked about this quite a lot on the previous two podcasts in the Barriar and the Warrior's Apprentice. How those books were very much about, changing social mores and changing, changing other people's minds about what is possible to look after disabled people. And of course, they do the same thing with Kodolka and the same thing with Bathari, all these people who are damaged, some of them are very damaged. And of course, that came to a head with Miles, Miles himself. And it's like, yes, my son is there. It's a similar kind of things, just a little cleft lip on this baby, and they kill the baby. And then, well, who killed the baby? That's the big question. So, anything else to say about The Mountains of Mourning? Because I think everything else... I mean, I really enjoyed that little short book. I read it in, it's about an hour to read it or something like that.
Yeah, it was good.
It was pretty good. Published quite early, it seems like. This is from the Mountains of Mourning from 1989. There's actually collecting a different collection. We just downloaded it as an ebook, didn't we? But it's also in a short story collection called Borders of Infinity, which has Mountains of Mourning, Labyrinth, and Borders of Infinity. So what notes have you got in there?
I have one note.
Yeah.
Which says, Pym's
eyebrows
rose editorially.
Editorially, someone raised their eyebrows editorially. Well, let's talk about the writing later. Let's just keep. Let's yeah. just put that
let's
aside.
Let's just have this as a side note.
Yeah,
we will come back to
what
doing stuff editorially.
Yes. Anyway, moving on to the main feature. That was the little preview. No, that was a little. What do you call it?
Overture.
Yeah. No, is it when you go to the cinema and they show the short film beforehand? What is it? What do you call it? The second feature. This is now the main feature. Anyway, put it this way.
Okay.
The war game.
Just one thing.
Yeah.
I gave it 4 points.
4 stars. The Mountains of Mourning. I can't remember what I gave it. I would have given it 3.5 because it's a decent book. It's not great. There's a few things that I thought were a bit wrong with it, which I'll get onto later. Anyway, let's get on to the war game, which... Well, actually, let's talk a bit about The Weatherman, because The Weatherman is this kind of little separate bit. It's the first third of the book, or first quarter of the book of the Vor game. It's this separate little story. It starts just a few days after Mountains of Mourning, isn't it? Because he graduates from his officer's training. Is it officer's training? Yeah, is it officer's training? Yeah. He graduates from officer's training. He's done very well at officer's training. And it actually mentions a few of the different things that he did. Actually, I think it was in The Mountains of Mourning. It was oh, yes, and I talked to my cousin. No, was it his cousin?
Ivan.
Ivan, yes. And my cousin Ivan, I sneaked up behind Kevin Eisen and this. And I was like, why can't we read about... later on I was thinking, why didn't we have a book that was set with Miles at... his officer's training, because there he's a student. It's nothing is life or death. You know, maybe a few people can die in training. You know, because that happens on these big military exercises. Some people die, but they're probably
idea what happened.
We have no idea, but we do have some ideas. But it's like, why did we skip this massive? Like, it's like 3 years of his life where he's becoming an officer. He's interacting with all of these other students, loads of people that he probably interact with throughout the rest of the series. Like, why did we skip over this? You know, it's like, and Harry Potter went into Hogwarts, and then 7 years later, he came out of Hogwarts, and now here he is as an adult. And you're like, no, wait a second, the stuff that happens at Hogwarts is that's where some real adventures can come in. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say this is like Harry Potter, but
the Mount, not the Mount, the War Game or the Weatherman.
Yeah,
this literally starts with the end of like they had all their exams, and now they're going. Will be spread out into the
And Ivan goes off to this ship,
officers and military world, and everybody wants to be like doing duty on ships, and Myers wants to be doing duty in space and stuff.
Yeah, and of course he's going to be on the flagship. The flagship is called the Prince Zerg. I like Zerg. Have you seen the
Zorg?
No, you seen the Beverly Hills Cop with Serge? He's like, Serge, yay! Axel Foley! Anyway, there's have you seen the... but there's the character Serge, and he's like, what's Serge? He's a washing powder. No, anyway, I can't remember the jokes about his name. Serge.
Yeah. But anyway,
oh my god, Axel Foley!
Stop. Anyway, in these... what was also quite interesting to see is that in these books, there's loads of Russian names. Oh. So you have like his grandfather is called Pyotr.
Yeah. And Aral is it, I think, is
Aral, I don't know. Okay. But you have this kind of split between also on Barrier, you have different cities and different regions. So you have some that sounds more French.
On Barrier.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, that's true. Yeah, because I think it even mentions that there's different nationalities.
Yes,
like this.
Yes.
He spoke the French dialect and he spoke the common dialect whatever it is. Yeah.
Exactly. And so you have loads of these Russian names and Russian... Like you have... spoiler, where when he goes to the weather station, his boss is called Metsov. So
spoiler. It's not a spoiler, it's just a character. It's not a spoiler.
But you meet all these different names all the time, so you're never quite sure how to pronounce them, and then you read them and then they're different in your head. And
yeah. So this story starts off, I mean, this the weatherman, like this first section of the war game starts off, and they pretty much say, look, you have to go and spend 6 months on this Arctic wasteland, and you're going to be doing the weather reporting, which is a job which we send people to who have been bad elsewhere, or we send them there to teach them a lesson. You know, this is the place, like all of the normal troops have to go there to train, but if you're stationed there, you know, if you're an officer there that's stationed there, so he goes off and does this weather thing, and they literally say to him, you have a massive problem with authority.
Yeah.
A really big problem with authority. What you need to do is go there, keep your head down, just keep your head down for 6 months, follow orders, do your job right, don't fuck up, and if you get through that, you're going to be going directly onto the new flagship, Prince Zerg. And this is a new flagship. It's the biggest, most powerful ship. It's called Prince Zerg, and we're mentioning it a lot at the beginning of the book. Do you think it's going to be coming in handy later on in the book? Shh, spoilers. It comes up handy by the end of the book. Anyway, so it's like going... And I actually made a note, and I actually pressed down on the thing. I made quite a lot of notes as I went through. And I was like, why? And the note that I made was, why am I hoping for the most boring 6 months ever? And I was like, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be a real departure for Miles if he is sent there? And at every point, he just goes, like, we actually see his internal process going, I really want something. And the best way that to get something is not by lying continuously, is not by cheating, is not by making snarky comments. Like, wouldn't it be a real nice departure after the Warrior's Apprentice, where all he did was lie and cheat and connive and all this other kind of stuff? And I was just like, wouldn't it be great if he actually learnt some lessons, you know, and he actually got all the way through it. And then maybe at the very end of this part of the story, maybe after 5.5 months, something comes up and he goes, okay, it's been 5.5 months. Now I have to say, like, something comes up, something important comes up, and now I'm going to say something. And you can always see what's going on in the back of his head. He can have all these snarky comments in the back of his head. He can always look at people and think, well, it's going to go wrong, and I wouldn't do this, but I'm going to follow orders, and then it goes wrong anyway, and then he has to get out. But no, like, it was, I was just thinking, 6 months of the most boring stuff would be, for me, the best thing possible. And then it literally took, what, like 4 or 5 pages? 4 or 5 pages later, I made another note. And it was, how long did that take? ? And I was just like, really? That's it. It took 4 or 5 pages for him to be told, go there, don't do anything wrong, respect your elders, respect authority, and do this. And he is immediately lying. The first thing that he goes, oh yeah, he says, are all the keepers on vacation? Or is anybody actually running this bloody zoo?
And it's one of, he meets somebody in the corridor and the station where he hasn't met so many people there, but then he meets this person, and the first thing is that he says something like that to a person he doesn't even know who that is.
Yeah, he doesn't know if it's someone important. He doesn't know if it's the most lowly thing. It doesn't matter. Straight away, you know, is anybody actually running this bloody zoo? Like, and he swears, and of course it is Metzoff. Spoiler, it's Metzoff. It's like the base commander glared down at Miles and growled, I run it, Ensign. Dum, 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 dum. And, oh yeah, I didn't listen to this as an audiobook. That's because I read this as an ebook. So just to be clear, that's why I made these notes and actually could tag these notes and make down some of these notes. And I was just thinking, like, what is it on your iPad? 25 pages. I mean, these are small pages as well because on the iPad. 25 pages into the book, he has made an enemy. And this enemy is really important later on, which we'll get into later,
like,
as well.
He's getting like he's becoming a really, really big enemy. It's not like
just, it's not a small enemy. Yeah.
It's like one of his main enemies.
People die because Metzoff doesn't like Miles Vorkosigan. And the reason why Miles Vorkosigan isn't a very likable guy is because he swears and insults his base commander to his face ignorantly on their first meeting. Later on, Metzoff shoots at Miles to kill him. Again, spoilers. But he shoots at Miles to kill him. The guy in front of Miles protects Miles. You know, I can't remember. I think it was like by accident or anything, but you know, he stepped in the way and protect, like, someone died because of Miles. And Miles is like, oh, well, I survived that situation okay. You know, I mean, he got like a tingle from the blast or whatever, or the nerve disruptor. And I'm just like, you fucker. Like, literally the reason why this person was in front of you and is shot and died is because you were a dick to Metzoff on this first meeting, literally 5 pages after you were told, go there, keep your head down, don't be a dick. Don't go there, don't be a dick. People died. Maybe hundreds of people. One person specifically died, like, directly because of that. But how many other people died because of Metzoff? You know, because Metzoff was against Miles, because Metzoff was kicked out and stuff like that. Because it was just one thing on top of another, and it all comes from Miles' first impressions with people, and it's just awful. And I can't believe this person's meant to be the main character. Kevin, you can talk now.
Thank you. I mean, Metzoff is crazy. He is a weird, insane person, and he is somebody who likes torturing or
yes,
who likes,
he has a history,
giving
yes,
pain to other people.
Yes.
So it's not only that Miles is just producing that, but how can you? He should be so clever. Like, this is the thing: Miles Vorkosigan seems to be a clever person, but he doesn't act like a clever person. He gets himself into situations again and again and again. And I don't understand why we need to go through all that. And I don't understand why we have to live with a main character I just don't like. I just don't like him.
No.
He is a totally not sympathetic to me. He Like, I like way more other people than him, but I have to read about him.
And this is what I mentioned a few days ago. Well, not a few days, whenever we were chatting about this. It was like, why was The Warrior's Apprentice about him when it was Elena's story? It was Elena's problem. Elena didn't know who her mother was. Elena wanted to go here. Miles went on this journey with Elena because they thought they could get there, and then they went off on this other adventure. And in the end, it's Elena who changed the most. She went off and stormed this ship that went through. You know, she was the one who took over the Dendari mercenaries in the end. It was her story, but we had it from Miles's point of view. And I was, you know, when you finish that kind of thing, you're just like, well, why can't we spend time with the nice young, like sensible girl who wants the best out of the situation, who falls in love and falls in love with someone who isn't the count. You know, it was even her love, like even this love story, you know, even the relationship, it was all her, but we had it from Miles's point of view. And now here I'm just like, well, The Mountains of Mourning was good. Why can't we have more like that? Why can't we have like a sensible Miles who is literally trying to do the best thing? He's got a mission. His father said, go here and do something sensible. And he went there and he did something sensible. And then he's like, and now go up here. And it's like I'm reading a different book. I'm just like, even though I enjoyed that first part of the book, because it was a bit of, there's a mystery in there.
Yeah, and he did suffer quite a bit.
Yeah, but straight away, it's like, well, let's go do it. Well, this guy is... yeah, but he suffered all the time because of his own stupidity. It's like...
His
own lying, like, they said, hey, have you been given these instructions? Yes, he lied. It literally said, yes, he lied. And I'm just like, why are you lying there? And then he takes this tractor out into the middle of nowhere, and he just didn't read the instructions. He hadn't read the manuals. He hadn't read the book. He's just like, oh, well, I'm clever enough. I'll be able to get through this. And people play tricks on him. And of course they play tricks on him. But for his own stupidity, he almost dies. And that's another thing that Metzov was just like, what are you doing? You sunk this tractor. And he's just like, oh, well, I was, you know, and we're meant to think that Miles... And I was like, yeah, Metzov, this guy is a fucker. This guy did endanger this thing. He endangered lots of people. Of course, he lived through it himself, but I don't know. It's just really strange. I did like the kind of murder mystery when they found the dead body and he sorted it out, you know. And I thought if it would just go like that and just keep going on, like he felt like he had learned a lesson there. And there was this part when Metzov was going crazy and he got all the people out in front and they were going to freeze to death.
Yeah, it was when the mutiny started.
And I was just like, and I was just thinking, wouldn't it be great that at this mutiny, that Miles Vorkosigan, by this time, said something sensible and managed to talk Metzov out of it. You know, like, wouldn't it be great if by this time he'd actually made friends with Metzov, and when Metzov was going crazy, Miles could be the calming influence, you know?
Really?
Wouldn't it have been great that Miles actually didn't use bullshit, lying, stupidity, and managing to get out of situations just because he's the main character? Wouldn't it have been great if at that point, like, he hadn't have insulted Metzov, he hadn't have not followed orders, he had read the manuals, he hadn't made stupid mistakes, and all the way through, up until that point, because the you know, the explosion in the chemical, the storage area, had nothing to do with Miles, that would have happened whether he was there or not. But just imagine, up until that point, he'd followed orders, he'd done everything right, and when that happened, when Metzov was going crazy, Miles could say, look, I'm an officer here as well. You know, I'm an officer here as well. What you're doing is bad. And wouldn't it be great if he had managed to talk him down to the situation? Wouldn't it have been great if he had had the same intelligence and same insight and foresight that he seemed to have had in the Mountains of Mourning here? But no, he just uses his privilege, which is all he has. He has land, he has money, he has privilege, and he's, you know, now an officer.
Yeah.
And he uses that all the time. And that's what he uses to get out. He's just like, I'm the most privileged person here. I'm literally going to use my privileged position to help out all of these nobodies. And that's what he does.
Nobody sees that when you...
What's that?
Point to me. Is that allow me to talk?
No, over to you.
I mean, of course, if the whole first part of the story would have been different and he wouldn't have been a dick right at the beginning, it would have changed a lot. But... the whole situation when then Metzov gets them out there and then Miles is trying to talk again. It's always about Miles talking. It's when they also, later on, when they find out that the only way that they can make sure Miles is not dangerous is that they have to shut him up. They have to make sure he doesn't talk to people.
Yeah.
Because all he does
is bullshit
the whole time... He is using his status and talks to people, and then he kind of puts them in the kind of a cloud around them, and they don't know what's going on, and then they think, oh well, maybe he's right, yeah, there's something true, and then that could happen, and this could happen, and this whole situation where they're standing outside and Matsov getting crazy, it's a bit weird also,
but it's an interesting situation.
It is an interesting situation, but the way how Miles get out of it is feels again very much like, oh yes, I use my status to save myself. And then he kind of does something for the other guys as well, but not really, because they get like transported away, because they are like,
they were actually
treated like mutants.
Mutants?
Mutineers?
Mutineers. It's not mutants. He's a mutant. I was getting mixed up. Yeah. Mutineers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and not, mainly not Miles. And this whole first part is really cool. And then he gets back.
Can I just finish up with this first part, though? Like,
with the first part?
Well, you know, the weatherman situation where he gets set up there. You know, when you were just saying that he uses his status to get out of it.
Yeah.
I think that's quite important, because when he was at college, he was all, you know, like at the beginning of the beginning of the Mountains of Mourning, isn't it, where no, it's the beginning of The Warrior's Apprentice, where he falls over, and The Warrior's Apprentice, Elena is The Warrior's Apprentice. Anyway, the beginning of the novel, The Warrior's Apprentice, he's like, and now I'm going to do this, and I'm going to jump down here, and he takes the Vor off the front of his name, isn't it? They just call him Kosigan. They don't call him Vor Kosigan. It's like, oh yes, because I'm not allowed to be treated as a Vor, I have to be treated just as a normal person.
Yeah.
And it's like they've gone out of their way all the way through training to treat him as a non-Vor Kosigan. He just has to be cadet, you know, cadet Miles Kosigan, you know, whatever they do. They take that Vor from to keep him equal, so he can't use his status against other people. And of course, as soon as that training, when he's at this, Arctic base, then straight away he uses, well, I'm the son of the Prime Minister, so if I die, it's on your head.
And it's like Impsec comes
and comes and investigates his death. And it's just one of those things I just don't, like, why should we, I don't want to say why should we care, but it's like, that's not, like, as a story, that's, like, I really enjoyed the story up until that point, until he took his clothes off, and I realised that the solution to his problem was, my father's the Prime Minister, and that's the solution. It's just like, well, that doesn't make for an interesting story, that doesn't make for interesting fiction and resolution, if your get-out-of-free-jail card is always like, well, my superpower is that I'm rich and famous. He was like, yeah, that's, and it's not even cool. It's not even like James Bond with his credit card, and just he can just fly around the world, because he's like, oh, that's mysterious, you know, and everything.
But the thing is, what makes this not enjoyable is that this comes over and over and over again.
Exactly. Miles Vor Kosigan is not disabled. He lives in a world where technology enables him to do everything. Like, if his bones break, he can just sit out a fight for as long as he wants. For a hero which I thought would revolve around him being disabled, he is the most abled person, because his, you know, physical prowess or anything like that just doesn't factor into these stories. Like, I mean, it does a bit here, but he goes up to the Arctic, and I was just thinking, oh, this is going to be great. None of the clothes are going to fit him. And they didn't, actually. That was one of those other parts.
He lost
his boots, and then he had to wear women's clothing. Yeah, he's always wearing, like small women's and child stuff. And that kind of stuff is interesting. That's the kind of thing that I like about it, but it's just never a factor in anything. You know, the only reason why he is ever disabled is like when he goes out into the back beyond and people go, oh, you're disabled, and they look down on him. But in the army, people can't look down on him because he's an officer. And when he's a cadet, or, you know, or he has that privilege, you know, he's in that privileged station thing. And I was just like, wouldn't it be great if, like, one of the things that he has to do is actually physical, like something he has to do to save somebody else, not to save himself, but to save somebody else, is physical. And he's like, I'm going to go into this situation and I'm probably going to break most of the bones in my legs, probably most of my wrists and an arm, but I'm going to do it anyway, because I'm the only one small enough to fit into this tube. I mean, again, he did a bit of I'm the smallest one to fit in this tube, and he repairs some ducts or something. He can get into the, you know, inspect some things.
I don't think that was a nice situation when he gets down to the plumbing.
Yeah, whatever. But I'm just saying that sometimes his thing. But wouldn't it be great if he was a hero? He was the only capable hero because of his disability, or despite of his disability. And it just never comes up. He is super privileged, super rich, super famous, unless he's not allowed to be famous. And yeah, he just goes into it. Anyway, so that's that first part. Let's get on to the second part of the book, where it suddenly takes a left turn. I thought this was going to be, oh great, it's not going to be spacefaring adventure. It's going to be set on Barriar, because I like Barriar as a place for fiction. I like the project of Cordelia's project of modernizing, and Aril's project of, you know, of turning the military around and being more democratic and being more liberal and being more progressive and all that. I like that project on Barriar, and I could see that coming through, you know, as like, oh, this is the French minority people over here, and this is the Russian, you know, Barriar, and you know, all that kind of stuff. I liked that. I liked that part of the book. And then suddenly, like, part of the way through, it's like, well, what are we going to do with him? We have to, like, Imperial Security is going to look after him. And suddenly it's like, and now let's get back to the Warrior's Apprentice, and goes off and visit Dendar.
Now, first they keep him.
Yeah, but it's just not a holding pattern. Yeah. It's not in prison, but it's just like,
it's just,
well,
he can't leave. He can't go anywhere. He can't do anything. And then again, it's like, okay, what should we do with him? And then they give him something which he really wants.
Yes, he's rewarded in the end. And I'm just like, how can everything just fall into your lap? Like, some of my favourite writing in Shards of Honour is when Cordelia does all the heroic stuff, and she gets taken back to Beta Colony, and then it's sort of like she meets the president and is paraded in front of the press, and then it's just this little bit of writing, you know, it's this bit of thing where she's in this kind of weird thing that she's being told that she had Stockholm Syndrome, and that she's actually been, you know, all this time, it's the other guy, oh, well, he must have raped you, or must have mind raped you, or whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yes, you're actually doing this and you're in denial. She's like, no, I'm not in denial. It's like, well, now you're in denial that you're in denial. And all of this stuff, it was this really mundane, like, on the outside, it was just a really mundane situation that after being a hero, she had to come back and live with it. And I just think, well, isn't that great that, like, he's going to now be stuck? And I was just thinking, there's a lot of this book to go, but wouldn't it be really great if for the rest of the book he just looks at these security screens, or, you know, he helps out with the computer systems?
But then it wouldn't be a long book like that.
No, it wouldn't be a longer book, but all I want is for Miles to learn patience. And it looks like, and just as it's looking like he's learning patience, or going through something a bit mundane, but which, like a mundane challenge, or like a challenge in mundane life, it's something like, no, now you're going to cruise around the galaxy, save the day, win the battle, save the prince, do all of this, you know, and I'm just like, can we not bring it down to like the personal level, which was in, you know, in those first books, in Shards of Honor and Barriar, and also in Mountains of Mourning, and also in a way which was in the Weatherman at the beginning. But no, it just goes off into silly running around the galaxy, running around here. So do you want to talk a little bit about the political situation, because we mentioned this yesterday?
Oh yeah. So first it starts that he gets called to Ilion, which is the main guy of the Imperial Security.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is supposed to be some kind of spy or agent.
Yeah, but
or
he's got
something.
Two cover identities.
So they want him to kind of reactivate Admiral Naismith and the mercenaries, which was a bit weird, because I thought the mercenaries would kind of be in Barriarian control.
Yeah.
And they would kind of know what's going on about them. Turns out they don't know anything about what's going on with the mercenaries there.
And now they're Osarians again.
That I come later to that. And then they give him a second identity called Victor Rotha, who is
An arms dealer,
and then he has to, and then, yeah, so these two personalities, which Miles has to do somehow, and then they go out to a place between two wormholes, and they have Aslund and Pole and Vervain, and
Setagenda.
Setagenda. And, I had no idea who was where and what they did and who was, like, against whom and what they wanted and, like, all this political tactic stuff and maneuvering. And it was just not clear in my head, and I never knew.
And also, it's just not interesting.
What is Aslan? Is Aslan like a space station, or what is Vervain?
There was Aslan.
Is that a space? Is that a space station? What is Pol? Is that a planet?
Yeah, it's one of those weird things where you just, like, when you're reading it, and this is the big problem, again, that I had with The Warrior's Apprentice. It's like, and now there's these two people fighting, and we're fighting for this side, and the other people are fighting for the other side, and you're just like, well, why are you fighting for this side? And this time it was a little bit clearer, like, the Setagendans are going to come back. The Setagendans, we know they're bad, because they've already invaded Beriar as soon as they found that new wormhole opening above Beriar. Those are the guys who nuked, you know, the nuclear weapons that had been dropped on Beriar before. That was the Setagendans. So we know the Setagendans are bad, but it's just like bad over there.
We don't know anything like more specific about it. We don't know what they want and why they want it.
Nope.
The only thing we know is that they, at the same time, they tried to invade Escobar as well, or Nakoma, or whatever. And all these things are just so confusing, and I read it and I don't understand anything. And then they send Miles out with somebody called Ungari and another
guy,
and so they really actually take Miles out into space to, like, act as some people, and they think that would be good.
Yeah, it's like, what, do they not know this guy already?
What? I mean, yeah. I didn't understand why Ilian really knows about Miles' problem with being a bit
A bit subordinate and crazy and lying and just sociopathic. I mean,
what is the main problem is that when something happens politically and Miles thinks he's the only person who, like, sees all the wiggly paths.
He just goes forward blindly into these situations. It only works out for him because he's the main character of the book. If anybody else makes a snap decision, it probably be wrong. If Miles makes a snap decision, it'll work out for the best. And you said, oh, because I finished this book and then you were reading through and you're like, oh no, he does suffer a bit in this book. He does. It's like, yeah, but every decision that leads to suffering accidentally and amazingly leads to him saving the day as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this massive coincidence. Like, he goes here and then this person turns up. And I was just like, well, like, did Metzov turn up? No, I can't remember. But anyway, something happens and then the Emperor turns up. Gregor turns up, and I'm just like,
no, let's start a bit further ahead. So when they arrive on this space station, I think it was Pol, they found out that, or Miles found out, because he had to reactivate Admiral Naismith, that the mercenaries that he called Dendari weren't called Dendari anymore, because Oza, one of the captains that he kind of
fucked over the previous book,
included in his mercenaries with the weird kind of mind trick things.
It was a Ponzi scheme. It was a pyramid scheme.
Whatever.
It was with ships. It was like, you come and join me and give me your ship and I'll give it to someone.
And so Oza found, like, after Miles left, Oza found out, oh, actually, I was tricked here by Admiral Naismith, or this little guy there. And then he pretty much took over the mercenaries and then, of course, also called them after himself. So the mercenaries that were former Dendarian are now the Ozarins.
Yeah.
And Oza is like another main enemy of Miles.
Well, look, but he was looking for them anyway. So that's not a massive coincidence. It is a bit annoying that one of these enemies just turned up. But, like, when you're thrown in jail, and it was kind of foreshadowed a bit, but if you're thrown in jail, and if you'd have been thrown in jail 20 minutes later, this wouldn't have happened, or an hour earlier, this wouldn't have happened, or whatever like that. If you get thrown in jail on a random spaceship in the middle of random space, and you just happen to bump into the emperor of your planet, or your system, or whatever it is like that, it's just like, how likely is that? Why does the whole book revolve around being thrown in jail and, oh, check it out, there's this other guy in there?
Yeah.
And then, why did it revolve around? It was like, oh, and who's this? Oh, it's Metzov. We met him earlier on in the book, and now he's back. And I was reading that, I was just thinking, fuck, I thought Metzov was just a guy to get this guy in trouble at the beginning, like in this thing. It's just like, what the fuck? And then later on, so I can't remember, there was like another meeting that took place. They're like, oh, now this. And I'm just like, what the fuck's going on here as well?
And then that turns up.
And what's that?
Eleanor turns up and is in the correct space and the place where she needs to be to help Miles. But I forgot what I wanted to say.
Anyway, it just got to the point. I was reading it and I was just thinking, this is stupid. It's just stupid. It's like the whole book revolves around, like, if Miles is really clever, why is he so stupid all the time? And it's not his cleverness that gets him out of situations. It's his random chance that gets him out of the situation. And, like, he's always just like, oh, and I'll do this, and I'll make sure I did this. And then something happens, like, a disaster happens, and three people dies. And it's like, well, you know, I was doing that on purpose to try and smoke this guy out. It's like, no, you weren't! It's like, even him being clever isn't him being clever. It's something happening and him just putting a clever spin on it afterwards. He's not... It's just stupid. It's just pathetic, you know, it really is. Anyway, what else do we want to say about the end of the book?
The battle. I wanted to just say that at the beginning of the book, it is kind of introduced that there will be something with Gregor, with the Emperor.
Yes, there is.
Because he already started talking about, I don't like my life as an emperor, and it's boring, and I want to be like a normal person, go somewhere, just...
But why couldn't we read Gregor's story then? Why can't we have a prince and the pauper? You know, the guy gets turned into the... Yeah. You know, they swap places.
And whenever Gregor was part of the story, I really enjoyed it.
Yes, Gregor's cool.
He's like a nice character and a sympathetic guy.
It's like Ivan in the previous one. As soon as Ivan turns up, like, Ivan's nice. Why can't we spend...
Ivan is a sexy gentleman.
Hunt, yeah, like... but at least he's interesting. At least he doesn't just lie. Why can't we have someone with a good heart? Gregor's got such a good heart. They have this conversation. It's just like, oh, you'll be really great. And I'm just like, holy shit, I really hope this series doesn't lead up to Miles becoming the Emperor or something, because he's just a, you know, it's sort of like this Paul Atreides guy is like, oh, we think we're... I just keep expecting him to turn into, like, Anakin Skywalker turns into Darth Vader.
Yeah,
but all the time he's this weaselly, nasty person. He just goes, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to be a bad guy from now on. He's just going to turn into Metzov. He's going to do something. And people go, you do realize you just tortured that guy. He's like, oh, I was just trying to be clever. And you're just like, fuck you, Miles. Like, why isn't it whenever he turns up, why doesn't all of his enemies immediately see him? And Osa almost does this. It's just like, kill him. Like, literally, as soon as he turns up and goes, ah, there he is, you guys kill him and just walk over, shoot him with a nerve disruptor directly into the face, and don't have someone miraculously save him. It happens time and time again where people just miraculously save him. It's just miraculously someone turns up, and literally as someone is pulling the trigger behind his head, like, story just happens and he gets out of it. And time and time again, he gets thrown into jail and just happens to escape. And this is what we were mentioning yesterday as well. Like, and then when other people escape, like, literally there's people running around his ship, which he knows escapes, and then he just goes back to his cabin. And guess what happens? Well, someone pulls a gun on his cabin.
And they're waiting there. But what also is that it's not only us, like the readers, or maybe it's just Luke and me who don't really like Miles, but it's also...
Nobody likes Miles.
Nobody. And, like, all the time people, like, compare him with these bad guys. Like, there's this character...
He is a bad guy!
There's the Cavillo.
The woman.
The woman. Yeah. She turns up. She is a very crazy woman, and... all the time people say, oh,
a bit like Miles.
Really like Miles. Like, Miles, you really like this person. And Miles even know that himself. And I don't understand why is this whole series built on a person. He doesn't really like himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he mentioned that several times, that he's like a bit on the edge of becoming a bit insane. And so he doesn't like himself. His friends don't like him.
No.
His enemies don't like him. Of course, yeah, I understand that. But the only person that from time to time again is on his side is his father.
Yeah.
And Miles can do whatever he wants to his father. His father is always like a very nice person. And it's just such a pity.
It upsets me how Miles treats his father with complete... Literally, his father's just going, yeah, look, I went... You know what happened? I went to spend that time on the Arctic station as well. And all I did was get really drunk. And I'm like, yes, Aril is a human. Aril has faults, which are like human faults, that he went there and he spent 6 months on the station. And what did he do? He got through it by drinking a lot. And that's what I like about Aril. Now, check this out. This is a note that I made here when I was reading through. I actually put, Miles is a force for evil, or force of evil. This is a quote from the book. How many of these honest people have I just lied to their deaths? Miles actually has this realization. How many of these honest people have I just lied to their deaths? And I'm just like, in capital letters, fuck you. That's all I can say. You are lying these people. Sure, that maybe it's the, you know, the ends justify the means. He lies then, and less people die later. But just all the time. Anyway... Let's, the thing before I said about the security as well, that was what we talked about the other day. It's like, if security is this bad all the time, that Miles can just escape from anything and get through any security and just, you know, get past anyone. And, like, if it's that bad, you'd think that he would improve security on his own ship until, of course, other people just escape from his ship and then get through and get into his room and stuff. It's just like, if security is always that bad, how does anything work? Do any prisons work there? Are all prisons that bad that people could just escape? And I understand it that there was some people sympathetic to Metzov on the ship, and also there was other people sympathetic for Miles on the ship, you know, going backwards and forwards in that way. But you'd think it would just be like, ugh. Anyway, Miles should be dead by now, and really, I wish he was. Anyway, let's get onto some more of these notes here. Oh yeah. He never learns. I cannot apologize. I made a lot of mistakes, but disobeying his order to wait on Aslan Station wasn't one of them. This is Miles talking to, was it, Ilian or whatever. Okay. He's like, I cannot apologize. You know, I made mistakes, but I disobeyed his order. But he didn't know at the time that he was disobeying the order that that was the right thing. Only afterwards did he realize that it was going to lead to success.
Yeah.
Like... Only afterwards did he realize that it was actually going to save Gregor rather than endanger Gregor. It's just like, it's always this post-hoc rationalization of his decisions, and everything always just works out to him. Oh yeah, the end battle here. End battle, no urgency. This is what you mentioned as well when you're reading the battle sequence. Was it only like 2 nights ago that you were reading this?
Yeah, and it was like, it's built up so big on this battle, and you really think, oh, is something going to happen and stuff, and then...
Nope, just waiting around. And it's just like hours passed the Setagandans formed up again. It's just like, what? Don't just tell me hours are passing. And of course, you said it's because it has to be boring. You know?
I knew that. I mean, I did understand because Miles always wanted to be in space. He always wanted to be part in like the tactics, battle, combat thing.
But he did and that
then,
already.
And then he was sitting in that spaceship, sitting in the tactics room, not being the commander. Because he tried to give the
to Tongue,
and he did quite good this time. Yeah. Like he didn't involve himself, no. But then he saw
he was a figurehead. That's what his job was, to be a figurehead.
He did it this time. He actually did it, and then he realized, oh, so battle in space is just sitting in front of computers and nothing really happens.
Yeah,
and
he's not disabled.
And what?
It comes back to the same thing. He's not disabled because anybody could be sitting there in front of computer screens. Other people are out doing the strenuous stuff. Other people are out doing the dying stuff. He is so important that his physical disability doesn't affect him, because literally it's saying, all I need to do is sit here in front of these colourful screens and send other people to their deaths.
Yeah, but what my point was wasn't about being disabled. My point was that he needed to see the true life. He needed to see, working as an officer in a spaceship doesn't mean loads of adventures and activities and stuff. It means just boring work.
Doesn't make for an interesting military science fiction series, though, does it, if it's just boring work?
No, it doesn't. But I think Miles had to see that.
So there's this really great writer called C.J. Cherry, and she writes... I read quite a lot of her series of books, and we should actually read one of her books, because she's a really good science fiction writer. And she writes, like, there's a full book of nothing but people just living on a space station talking about stuff. And it's a military science, you know, it's military science fiction. And then you go through, and then at the end, it's the same kind of thing. The battle lasts, like, a quarter of a second long because it's in space. And it's just like, done like that. But there's a whole book and all of the, you know, arguments that take, like, people just have a conversation and you're just, like, on your edge of the seat. You know, like, the movie that we watched, Sunshine, where they're having a decision about who they're going to kill. And you're just, like, nothing's happening. All it is are people sitting around, but, like, the stakes are really high and the interpersonal relationship, it's all of that kind of stuff. And then at the end it's sort of like, oh yeah, it's military science fiction, here's a bit of action, and it's just over, like, quickly. It's just like you know, because you're in space and you know they have to, like, these books have to artificially make the situation more interesting than it is, you know. You know, like when you're in the Wrath of Khan, oh, and they're going to a nebula and they're flying around, otherwise it's just two ships shooting lasers directly at each other, you know. Yes. It's that kind of thing. They have to make it interesting in that way. But CJ Cherry, she makes it interesting by, you know, good writing. Anyway, yes, at the end. So another thing which had been set up for, like, two books, check this out, Tung, and then Admiral Vorkosigan. Like, in the previous book, he's like, when they meet him in jail, it's like, oh, yeah, Vorkosigan, have you met him? Oh, I've met Vorkosigan. And, you know, he always keeps it secret from Tung that he's Vorkosigan's son.
Naismith?
Naismith is Vorkosigan's son.
Yeah.
But Tung doesn't know that.
But Tung doesn't know that Miles is Miles Vorkosigan.
Yeah, exactly. But we discussed this in the previous book. Tung is the biggest Vorkosigan fan. Like, he's read his books, he's read about this thing, and he's read about that, and it's just amazing. Oh, this is great. He's the best guy ever. And then in this book again, it's like, oh yeah, Vorkosigan was great. And then it's sort of like, oh, we're going to meet, I'm going to meet Vorkosigan. I was like, oh, this is going to be the best scene ever. Yeah. Tung is going to meet Vorkosigan, and he's going to look at Miles
and
he's going to find out, or even if that doesn't happen, that's going to be all on the edge, and it's going to be great because Tung is going to meet his hero Vorkosigan and stuff like that. And then it builds up to this, and when it happens, it's over in two sentences. It says Admiral Naismith was painfully polite during lunch, and then it moves on to the next, like, there's one other line, I didn't make a note of it, there's one other line, and then it moves on to the next chapter. I was like, fucking hell, you've been building up to this Tung meeting Vorkosigan for two novels. This is Tung's entire existence is wrapped up in his love and or admiration of Admiral Vorkosigan, and it's the only thing that is mentioned is Miles's behavior in that meeting between the two of the most interesting characters in the series,
and not even Miles as Miles Vorkosigan.
No,
Miles
it's a fake persona. Naismith. Even though that's another note that I made. Miles and he says something. Oh, Miles and Naismith are going to have a conversation tonight about themselves. And I was like, and my note was, we haven't spent enough time with non-Naismith Miles to tell the difference between them. It's like there's this, who is Naismith and who is Miles? You know, it's a weird thing. Anyway.
I mean, it's quite obvious. There is a big difference
in
the behavior. And what I wanted to say, there is this one thing I wanted to, when Miles and his friends actually come back to the Prince Serge, like Serge, how you call it?
Serge.
the Admiral Vorkosigan is on that ship, and he's also an admiral, not like Miles, who isn't an admiral.
Yeah.
And then there is this person, Lieutenant Yegorov.
Yeah.
And he welcomes the group on board the ship. And
yeah, and he doesn't know that Miles is actually Miles. Yeah.
Yes. And I do understand when people in the beyond...
The back beyond.
In the back beyonds, when they don't know who Miles is.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand how... Like, don't they have news? Don't they have pictures?
The thing is...
Don't they have television or something, so where they see, oh, this is my prime minister,
and his son.
This is his son. Shouldn't they have a picture of him in mind?
This was the big news that everybody expected when Admiral Vorkosigan was made into the regent, that he was actually going to take over it for himself, take the power, get rid of Gregor and put his son would be the next in line. Like, this is one of the main threats that everybody says, oh, you've kidnapped Gregor, Gregor has disappeared, we're going to do this, and then Aryl Vorkosigan is going to be next in line, and then his son is going to be next in line. Like, this is like the first, like the guy on the throne, and then number two and three, depending on which routes of claims that you're going to go. Like, it's not as if he can't be famous. Anyway, bring it back to the Mountains of Mourning. You said the people in the back and beyond shouldn't know about him. When the woman first turns up, it says, "Do you serve Vorkosigan, little man?" And I was thinking, wait a second. So he's a stunted man in the grounds of someone who is famous for having a stunted son who could have become emperor. And I was thinking, okay, she's from the back beyond. You're like, she's from the back beyond. She might not know. But then later on in the same book, okay, they say, when Miles says, well, what do they say? What do they say about me? And she says, they say a lot of things about you. And he's like, wow, even in the back beyond, everybody knows the Count's son is a mutant. And I was just like, so she meant, even in the back and beyond, everybody knows the Count's son is a mutant. Because he's a mutant, because everyone knows that. And if he is a mutant and not dead and wasn't killed when he was a child, is the thing that knows about him. And when they meet him, it's sort of like, do you serve Vorkosigan, little man? And I'm just like, N-k-k-k-k-k-k. And then later on they says, tell me, are you a relation to the Vorkosigan? If the Vorkosigan is famous enough that he's known as the Vorkosigan, his mutant son should also be slightly famous, and when you meet someone who's called Vorkosigan who is a mutant, or short, and disabled, isn't it obvious? Like, again, and this comes back to the same thing, he's recognised when it's important, he's never recognised when he isn't, and I'm just like, how come he isn't? Yeah, anyway, same kind of thing, like you say, a lieutenant on Prince Zurg, where
don't recognise Miles.
Doesn't recognise Miles, and even when him and his father are standing next to each other, like, and it's just, wouldn't you say, oh, you two look pretty similar.
I don't know. And one more thing I wanted to mention about the way Miles has no respect. And it's not only that he has no respect of officers or people that are in higher charge or, like, I don't know. He also has no respect of other humans, not even of his father. So after the whole weird political and Miles doing weird stuff and the Emperor and all that stuff, when they arrive on this big warship, the first thing when Miles sees his father, I mean, of course he's kind of acting
as
Naismith,
yeah,
I don't know, he says, hey, you imperial snails are going to go all fat and soft lolling around in this kind of luxury, you know.
But his father's got tears in his eyes because he's so happy to see him and comes over and embraces him.
Yeah, and just, Miles is just like,
he's just like, Aryl is a human being with human feelings. Miles isn't. Anyway, anything else about that? Or can we move on? Because I've got quite a few more writing notes to get through. A page of 19. Let's do this thing. So, first of all, some obviousness in the some of this writing, which, again, it's sort of like, if Miles is so clever, like, why is it so, like, why are things so obvious and then immediately made even more obvious by being explained to us that Miles understands it? For example, it's sort of like, oh, and, like, he goes out, you can see a video, you can see, on this video screen, you can see there's a person whose family was being held hostage. It's like, yeah, you can go and see your family in this video screen. And you're just like, you and I immediately thought, oh, well, it won't be a live video, it'll just be a recorded video. You had exactly the same thought. I had that same thought. Everybody reading the same book would have the same thought. And then it's like, he's like, everyone's had the thought. So when Miles then uses that thought, it's so obvious, because then she, you know, the, what is it, Cavello, she actually says, run the recording we made of cell six last, like, the recording we made last week's of cell six for him. And it's just like, and this isn't just about Miles being stupid and, or, like, less clever than all of us. It's about just the writing. Why is it so weird? It's sort of like, the key to strategy is not to choose... This is Cavello speaking again, because she's quite clever. It's like, the key to strategy is not to choose a path that leads to victory. It's to ensure that all paths lead to victory. And I was like, oh, that's quite clever. In my head, I was like, oh, that's quite clever. I bet that comes up again later, that he's gonna remember that at the right time and use that little thing back against her. And then, like, the next paragraph, he's like, oh, that's a nice aphorism on strategy. He'd have to remember that one. And I'm just like, don't, like, me as the reader, I know it's a nice, I can tell it's a quip. Like, when someone in a movie makes a quip, you know that the good guy is going to make the same quip back again, but change it in somehow. You know, and it's really obvious that when you hear one of these lines, that the other person's going to say that line back to them. You know, it happens in every movie, in romantic comedies, in dramas, in other comedies, and, you know, in action movies. There's always a line that's earlier on, you're just like, I bet that's going to be repeated when in the final moment, in the key scene and thing. And it always is. But, like, even in a book, it's recognizable that one of these lines is going to be like that. Don't have the character immediately comment on it and go, oh, I'm going to use that later on. It's like, don't tell me you're going to use it later on. Anyway, so some more writing stuff. Miles looks at himself in the mirror to describe himself. I thought that was a bit clunky, and I've mentioned this. Third book in a row, the main character looks at himself or herself in the mirror and describes him or herself in the mirror. So in The Mountains of Mourning, it's sort of murder growled the girl slash woman. It actually, like, because I'm reading this as an ebook now. The first ones I listened to as audio, but this is an ebook. And it's actually girl slash one, like a forward slash on the page.
Was it? I didn't see
it. Yeah. It says murder girl. And then later, and it's sort of like, and then when he's talking about Miles meeting Eleanor again, it's like he wanted slash did not want to see her again. It's like, this isn't correct English. Like, it's, I can see what she's going for with this clever writing. Like, he did slash did not want to see her again. But why doesn't she just, with good writing, explain the reasons, like, you know, part of him wanted to see her again, but a bigger part, like, his heart wanted to see her again, but his head really didn't, you know, all of this kind of stuff, but it's just, like, summed up in this. He wanted slash did not want to see her again. So it's like, he was undecided about, he was ambiguous about it. He was this about it. Anyway. So here's a line that I didn't make any note about, or didn't note, but I made note of it, but I didn't write any note at the time. Lubachik was the second most... was the second most painfully earnest man Miles had ever met. What does that mean? What is the second most painfully earnest man? Like, being
who's the first?
Yeah, I think it describes who was the first one, but it's like, no, I guess it doesn't actually. I think it's meant to. We're meant to think that Bathari is the first most painfully.
No, it's his father. Earnest.
No, I can't remember
who
it was.
Painfully earnest.
Yes, it doesn't. But the point is, painfully earnest. It's like he was the most painfully earnest man had ever met. And you think, okay, earnest man Miles I've ever met. You think, well, okay, that's already a bit clunky. But Lubachik was the second most painfully earnest Miles. So I didn't... Anyway, next up... So there's this thing... there was these two lines, actually. These two go together. Lubachik moved off, blah, blah, blah. And I made a note saying, moved is the blandest. Because if someone moves off, you know, like any kind of movement is movement. So saying someone moved off is the most blandest way. Walked off is more descriptive than moved off. Run off, sauntered off, trod off, walked away quickly. You know, all of these are kinds of movement. Movement is the catch-all term for any kind of movement.
You could
so it's the blandest. But then a little bit later, like a few lines later, or a few pages later, it says, after a bewildering Brownian trip around the room. And I'm like, okay, Brownian trip, Brownian is a kind of motion. Brownian motion, it's, you know, when particles in liquid and they kind of jump around, you know, they bounce around, you know, particles bouncing around in a glass and stuff like that. So you go from the most blandest to precise scientific term for Brownian motion. Einstein got the Nobel Prize for explaining Brownian motion. I think he got two Nobel Prizes, and one of them was for special or general relativity. But there's some stuff that people think he got a Nobel Prize for, and he didn't. Brownian motion was one of the things that he got a Nobel Prize for. And I'm just going, after a bewildering Brownian trip around the... And this is in the same story, that you have moved off, the most blandest, to so technical. And it's like, can we just stick with one or the other? Anyway. Here's some of these good ones. Miles' parting salute was almost subordinate. And I'm like, how can it be? Like, either you're subordinate or you're not subordinate. It's like being, and you're almost pregnant and you're not all, you know, it's like, it's one of those things that's like, oh, I'm slightly pregnant. No, you're pregnant, you're not. So what does an almost subordinate salute?
I mean, it can be something like that is still acceptable.
Yes, but you would say Miles' parting salute was barely acceptable. You know,
Yeah, but this is what she tries to say.
But it doesn't make sense. You can't do a salute which is almost subordinate because it means it's still ordinate. Because if it's almost subordinate, it means it is still. It's still okay.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those words. And just like every time I came across one of those things. Oh, here we go. The devil's cat's cradle in Ilyin muttered editorially.
Yeah.
Which.
Very well, he said. Editorial doubt injected into his tone.
Yes.
So there we have the editorial. And the thing was, after I read it once with the editorial and editorially and stuff, after we talked about it...
You asked me about that, didn't you? You're like,
I just saw it constantly everywhere. And then, so it is, like, in one book, it turned up twice. And in the other one, it turned up at least once.
Yeah.
And it's just way too much that it can appear so often, and I don't even know what.
Yeah, I still don't
muttered
know.
Muttered editorially.
How do you have editorial doubt injected into your tone, and how can you raise your eyebrows editorially? I still don't understand what that means. What does it look like to raise your eyebrows editorially? Is it with meaning?
Maybe anyway. For me, it sounds a bit like in a way of like a teacher would look at you like a bit more from above. I also have one. I don't know exactly how it started, but it is calculating brown eyes. I can understand that. Calculating brown eyes? Okay. It is...
Well, the eyes were calculating, yeah.
Competent-looking hands.
I didn't even... You made this note. I didn't make this note.
I made this, yeah.
There was another thing with cams. Miles made little negative motions with his hands. Like, what does making little... Like, he made little negative motions with his hands. Like, what is that motion? Like, what is a negative motion? Is it, like, doing a cut? Is it, like, going, no, 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 no? Is it waving your hand? Is it waving you
back? I think
this
is what
it is. Sort of, like, going, this, waving your fingers? Yeah. But it doesn't say what it is. You just got to imagine what that is.
I mean, I can kind of guess what she means there, but what are competent-looking hands?
I don't know.
How do they look like? I mean, is my hand competent-looking for singing?
Like if you have big hands, you'd think big hands are competent looking for like picking up a rock and hitting someone with, and small hands maybe. But yeah, competent looking hands.
Like the whole sentence, and so it goes on. Competent looking hands and a sardonic air which Miles sensed might be permanent and not merely directed at himself.
Merely, yeah.
Hmm.
But what? What's a sardonic air? Like being sardonic is
He sensed it.
He sensed the sardonic.
So, does it mean he sniffed it?
I don't know. Or... So, check this out. Here's some more writing things that really annoyed me. This isn't just in this book. I've noticed this in other books, but it came out a bit more. Like, when something is told, when a story is told in past tense, mm-hmm. and then when something happened, it happened today. And I'm thinking, well, if it happened today, how is it in past tense? It was warm today. No, it was almost warm today. And I'm thinking, well, in past tense, so it should be, it was almost warm that day, or it is almost warm today, because if it was almost warm today means that this is no longer today, but it's still today, which means that the past tense, it must have been written that evening. You're actually recounting the events from the knowledge of that evening. So it's weird. They had docked here at Pole 6 a day ago without incident. And it shouldn't be, they had docked here at Pole 6 the day before without incident, or, you know... In Mantis of Morning, as great as he had expended on ceremonies 2 days ago. But it should be, it expended on ceremonies 2 days previously, or 2 days before, or 2 days earlier. But 2 days ago means 2 days ago from the time. Anyway, that's his thing. Another thing, he headed west out of the camp, out of the base, at high acceleration. You can head out at high speed or under great acceleration. It just doesn't make sense. We'll finish off with the writing with this one because it's just terrible. Only one or two of the texts grasped what was being demanded, and I read that and I was like, only one or two, and I'm just like, if it was only one, it's only one, and if it was two. It was two. Like, how difficult is it to count? Like, how difficult is it to distinguish between the number one and the number two? Because really, you've got none. You've got one. It doubles the number two. So if it's like, oh, only 10 or 11, because you can't immediately count the difference between 10 or 11. So if like a few people do something, it's like, oh, about 9 or 10 people did that, you know.
But when you have like a group of 10 people and only one or like, only two people.
Yes, but you can't say only one or two people did something, because if two people did it, it's really obvious that two people do it. You see two people grasp it. And if one person does it, it's really obvious. Like, humans can really easily tell the difference between 0 and 1 and 1 and 2. When you get to, like, 9 and 8, like at a glance, you know, with those little counters that we're playing with that game today, you glance in and you go, how many counters are there? And you go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But if you look in and say, it's like, how many fingers am I holding up? And I, like, flash up 9 fingers, you'd be like, 9, like that. But if I go, how many fingers am I holding up? How many fingers? It's really obvious if there's one or two, and I just couldn't believe it's like only one or two. Maybe it's a bigger thing that I'm getting out with this than you are. This is obviously good writing for you, but like, how difficult is it to describe in a book if one person did something or if two people did it? It means different things if one person did it, because it's someone acting alone. If two people got it, it's more than one person getting it, so it's not just one clever person and stuff. Anyway, it's just all of this totally imprecise language, and it's painful to read. When it was being read to me as an audiobook, I could get through some of this stuff because it kind of just flowed past me, and yeah. I couldn't dwell on it.
When
I couldn't.
Read it actually stands out.
It stands out more because I'm going, and there's this Metsov's gaze felt like a knife blade in Miles' back, and I'm like, so they're walking, and Miles is in front of Metsov, and Metsov is following him. How can he know what the gaze feels like in his back? He can't see the gaze. He can't even see the gaze. And I'm thinking, well, what does it feel like? What does a gaze in your knife, like a knife blade in your back, a gaze feel like? So, and it turns out, the full line is, Metzov's gaze felt like a knife blade in Miles's back, prodding and probing. And I was like, if you've got a knife blade in your back, that's not prodding. That's stabbed into your back. It's not probing. If the knife blade is in your back, it doesn't feel like it's prodding. If it was like a knife blade at his back or between his shoulder blades prodding and probing, but it says a knife blade in his back, and it's just like this sentence makes no sense on so many levels that as I'm reading it, at three different points in the sentence, I'm thinking, what the fuck? That doesn't make sense. And then, like, I read the next two words, and I'm like, this makes even less sense. And then I read to the end of the sentence, right? How can you even write a sentence like that and think that it works? Now, in an audiobook, that would just be read to me, and I'd be like, oh. But then the next thing would be read to me, and I'd be just like, oh, well, whatever, and just carry on. But here, as I'm reading it and decoding the words for myself...
You can go back with your eyes.
Yes, and I'm going back, and then I make a note of it. And now I wrote, and then just before we recorded this podcast, I looked through the notes that I'd made, and I was like, I still don't understand how someone can be walking ahead of someone and know what somebody's gaze feels like in their back. And then what it feels like is something which isn't what that thing would feel like if you had a knife blade in your back. It wouldn't feel like it was prodding and probing. It would feel like sticking in painfully. But if it wasn't in your back, if it was at your... Yeah, anyway. It's just stupid. And I was reading this book and is this the same book? Was this really written by the same person who wrote... Who wrote Cordelia's Honor, like the Shards of Honor,
yeah.
and this other one. Now, Barrier. Of course, Barrier was written later, but I'm just like, this was written quite a long time after Shards of Honor was written. And of course, Barrier was written at the same time, you know, it was all one story. And I was just like, where are all the good ideas? Where are the interesting characters? Where's the stuff that makes sense? Where's the nice language? Where's the clever language? You know, the whole mirror dance,
Where are the characters that I like to read about. I don't want to spend so much time with Miles.
Miles hasn't earned anything. And I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, I liked Cordelia, that even she could get into situations and talk her way out of them.
Yeah.
But you felt like because she was a grown woman, she had the experience to do that. She'd already led people. She'd worked her way up in a egalitarian kind of like meritocracy where she was only a commander of a spaceship because she was really good at her job already. Yeah. It wasn't just handed to her. She had to earn her way there. And once she got there, she was this really interesting character who, when a situation could come up, she could actually look at someone and say, you're going to do the right thing because it's the right thing.
And she's human.
She's human. And I'm just... But Miles hasn't earned any of his skills. He hasn't earned any of his... privilege. He hasn't earned his way to anything. He's literally an overprivileged, spoilt brat who would, if it wasn't for the fact that he was the main character in the book, the first person who pisses him off would have shot him in the back of the head. the first person who didn't care that he was the son of the Prime Minister, you know, because Metzov couldn't do that, and he uses that to get out of that situation. But as soon as he turns up, Osarian, was it Osa should have just seen him and gone, you are a liar, you fucked us over last time, I'm not even going to give you a chance to sort this out, throw him out of the airlock now and make sure that he's got friends to make sure that nobody else, if anyone tries to help him, shoot them as well. He's that much of a threat to the galaxy, and I really wish it was not so. Anyway, we've gone on a bit longer. I was hoping to do this in an hour and so on. An hour and 20 minutes! Our joint podcast, we have to have two people say their say.
So yeah, but it's mainly... You said a lot more than I did.
You contribute a lot to this podcast. Lots of people enjoy these joint episodes. Hopefully people have enjoyed this one. So when it comes down to it, I'm not going to read on in this series, but you've already bought the ebook, so you're going to go on again.
I'll just try it out. The next one is Setagenda.
Oh, yeah, but someone actually messaged me on Goodreads and said that Setagenda is actually one of the better books in the beginning of the series. Then they start going downhill, but this is like, the Setagenda is like a high point at the beginning. So if you read it and tell me if it's better or not, and then I'll read it and we might do a review together. But otherwise, I've got other books to read. I'm not going to stick with this series any longer. I said that I'd stick with it until... You know, I had such high hopes after reading those.
Yeah,
after reading Falling Free,
the first two were so good.
And also, Mountains of Mourning is a good short story as well. Yeah. Like I say, I give that the 3.5 stars for that. But the Vore game, it's just gone straight down. I'm going to have to give it 1.5 stars, even though there's stuff in it that I like. There's a whole part at the beginning, the Weatherman bit, which there's stuff in there that I really enjoyed. But like, I was enjoying it despite myself. Like, all the time, I wish the book was going in a totally different direction. Even the few little bits that I enjoyed, even those bits that I enjoyed were, like, kind of despite it all. Anyway, 1.5 stars for me. What are you going to give it? You gave it 2 stars.
I gave it 3 stars because of the beginning.
Yeah, because you liked it at the beginning.
But then I thought back, and the beginning's actually not as long as the complete book. And I was actually really annoyed by the middle bits of the politics and strategy.
There is no strategy. The strategy is Miles runs headlong into a situation and bullshits his way through.
No, I don't mean Miles. Come on. Just like, I mean the whole politics of these, like... Who is who and where?
Oh yeah, you told
me
about that. You just didn't understand the diagram. Like, you'd have to sit down and draw a diagram of which way through.
And I didn't want to do that. So I had literally no idea who was where and what was what.
It just wasn't interesting enough for me to remember.
Okay. I don't understand. Okay. And then I kind of just kept on reading just because there were words written down, but I didn't understand the politics behind it. So it was a bit annoying and a bit boring in the middle too. So now
it has defeated me.
No, now I, after thinking and talking more about it, I think I give it 2 stars.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so this rates 1.75 stars on average, because I think the last one I rated it 2.5 stars and you rated it 3 stars, and yeah, we get this here. So
it's fun. So in the time we did the podcast, there were 7 more people commenting on your last.
No, this is from August 4th.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, click on view all night. Oh yeah, this is what I was just saying. Some people said, yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, it says it's worth pointing out that the next book, Setagenda, it was written after Barriar and is one of the better ones in the early going.
It was Joel saying
Joel that. Said that. Well, thank you very much, Joel. Oh, maybe I will give it a go. Oh, yeah, but I don't want to be sucked in because it's
I will read it and then we'll
talk
tell
about it.
You
yeah. So the next podcast episode that we're going to do, or I'm going to do, is the Philip K. Dick book called The Galactic Pot Healer, which I finished like 3 weeks ago. And in a way, I'm like, well, just listen to the SFF Audio podcast about it, because they enjoyed it a lot more than I did, or got a lot more out of it than I did. So maybe check that out instead of... maybe I won't do a podcast. No, I will. I'll do a podcast about it, but it'll probably be quite short because I can't remember too much about it. I'm currently reading the second book in the First Law series, which is the follow-up book to... let me quickly check this out. I've got it here in my audiobook. This is another audiobook. It's Before They Are Hanged, which is the follow-up to the first book in that series. I can't remember the first book. By Joe Abercrombie. Anyway, really enjoyed that first book, except that there was just no story in it. And there seems to be no story in this book as well. but it's really fun, and the audiobook narrator is good, so I'll do that one. I can't remember what book we're going to do. Oh, yeah, you read The Prefect. We're doing this long car journey, and we listened to the first 6 hours of The Prefect by Alistair Reynolds. You're going to finish that off. We won't do a podcast about that. Yes. But we think the next series that we're going to do as a book club is either going to be the next books in the Revelation Space thing,
yeah,
maybe, or we might just do the full culture novel series,
yeah,
by Ian M. Banks, as a bit of a goodbye to Ian M. Banks. Now that he's died, it might be fun to do as a read along book club thing with full spoilers going all the way through. I reviewed it for some of them already, but it might be good to go through in order, and I'll do it in the recommended reading order that I posted in the Ian M. Banks thread on the SMVIP listener group on goodreads.com. Anyway, let's just have a look. Thor game, 4.24 average.
Can't believe it.
And actually, let me look up the friends of me. The Thor game. Oh, there it is. Let me click on that one. Ah, it didn't work. Here we go. The Thor game. So my friend's review, which is pretty much SFBRP listeners, a 4.0 on average. Wow, so many people rated it 5 stars.
Yes, I see it. Look at this.
These are listeners to the SFBRP because they're my friends on Facebook. Look at this. All these people rated it. Look, someone rated, only one other person rated it 2 stars, and I'm rating it 1.5 stars. Anyway, how can people, anyway. So, I guess that's it. It's been 4 weeks since we released one of these.
Maybe we just don't get some that other people just get out of the book.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. It's this military science fiction. It's just like, just don't.
I think we just don't like Miles. But other people like Miles.
But it's not just this series. It's like all these other ones as well. There was the Starship Mutiny one. There was the On Basilisk Station, you know, the Honor Harrington book as well. But there must be some good military science fiction. And that's why I guess I wrote the novel Combat. If you want to read my take on military science fiction, go out shooty blasty kind of stuff, I guess you could read that, which is a little bit more of a sensible take on it. But I don't know. I guess I do have a reaction about it. Such a reaction that I kind of wrote a whole novel against this kind of like mindless, stupid violence that I wanted to write a book where the answer wasn't just, well, let's just have a bigger spaceship than the rest of these people. Okay, what's the answer to your problems? I don't know. Guns. Yeah, I don't know. Should we call it a day?
Yeah.
Email me, luke@juggler.net. You can follow me on goodreads.com or become my friend on goodreads.com and take part in the SFBRP listener group there. You can see what other people think about this series as well. You can contact Juliana as well on Goodreads. You can become her friend and see what she's reading. You're dated a few things.
I have some more friends now,
yeah. Yeah, how many friends have you got?
Where can I see that?
Click your face.
My face?
Yeah, your little face there. I'm sure it'll come up where it says how many friends you've got. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. And also, if you go over to my blog, lukeburridge.com/... You've got 12 friends now.
LukeBurge.com.
One of them is me. LukeBurge.com/blog. I've been posting lots of stuff there because I've been away at the European Juggling Convention. There's lots of photos on there, and there's loads of, there's one video, and there's some other bits and pieces of that great stuff on my blog. Otherwise, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.